Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
This is DW's Africa Link, a program that keeps you connected to the continent and beyond. I'm Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And I'm Wanjiko Mwawara. Now, Africa Link is live on Facebook, that's DW Africa, so do go ahead and join the conversation.
And from our studios in Bonn, Germany, here is what we've lined up for you.
Liberians wait to know who their next president will be.
Each day that passes by, there are people sitting and glued to their radio stations to hear what the Elections Commission result may look like.
And Zimbabweans have been reacting to Emmerson Mnangagwa's cabinet appointments.
There's nothing new. These are people that have been in the government for quite some time, and I'm not expecting anything new. Maybe if we give them a few months, but right now I'm very skeptical about the composition.
Those stories, plus your comments on social media, coming up after we know what's been shaping the world.
I'm Sertan Sanderson with DW News. More than 40 people have been killed in a terror attack in the Afghan capital, Kabul. A suicide bomber blew himself up near a Shiite cultural center and the offices of the AVA news agency. Two smaller bombs also went off at the center, though it is not clear whether they claimed any casualties. The Sunni extremist group Islamic State has claimed responsibility for the attack in an online statement posted by its propaganda outlet, Amaq. A spokesman for the Afghan Interior Ministry said that the death toll might rise. Russian President Vladimir Putin said a bomb that went off at a St. Petersburg supermarket earlier in the week was an act of terrorism. The explosion injured at least 13 shoppers at a branch of the Perekretsok supermarket chain. Putin added that the security situation in Russia would be much worse if thousands of Russian citizens who fought with the Islamic State group in Syria had been allowed to return home.
As you know, yesterday a terror act was performed in St. Petersburg. And not so long ago, Russian Federal Security Service has prevented one more terrorist act attempt. And what would have happened if those thousands of terrorists that I just mentioned had come back to us? If they had come back well-trained and armed.
Liberia is set to learn the results of its landmark presidential poll, pitting former football star George Weah against Vice President Joseph Boakai. The election marks the first democratic transfer of power in decades after two devastating civil wars in Africa's oldest republic. The National Election Commission said that a press conference was scheduled at 17:45 local time. George Weah is expected to be the winner of the poll, topping the first round of voting in October with 38.4% of ballots, but failing to win the 50% necessary to avoid a runoff. His challenger Boakai came second with 28.8%. The UN and the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, meanwhile both praised the peaceful conduct of all concerned during the election process. You're listening to DW News. Financial markets across the world are ending the year with a number of surprises. Bitcoin, which saw its value surge in recent months, lost more than 10% as South Korea announced it would move to regulate cryptocurrency trading. The US dollar, meanwhile, slipped to a four-week low. The greenback lost as much as 0.5% on Thursday, compared to its weakest since December 1st. The U.S. currency has dropped more than 9% this year, putting it on track for its biggest annual slide since 2003, the year of the Iraq invasion. The Australian dollar and Canadian dollar, meanwhile, hit two-month highs. And for more news and information, please log on to dw.com. I'm Sertan Sanderson.
This is DW's Africa Link program. I'm Wanjiko Mwaura.
And I'm Jane Ayeko-Kumet. And we start off in Liberia, where people are eagerly waiting to know who their next president will be. Constitutionally, the Electoral Commission is expected to announce the final results 4 days after voting. Supporters of football star George Weah claim he is poised to win the elections based on their data. Vice President Joseph Boakai said he had not seen any vote counts but was optimistic he would win. I've been speaking to Evelyn Pade, who is in Monrovia, to get a feel of what's happening on the ground.
Everyone is eagerly awaiting the Elections Commission result. Each day that passes by, there are people sitting and glued to their radio stations to hear what the Elections Commission result may look like, because the commission is the only entity that has the responsibility to announce final result and declare a person a winner.
It is Thursday. Christmas is over. Is it business as usual down there, or are shops closed and everybody is basically anxiously waiting?
Businesses have continued as usual. There are businesses open. People are going about their normal activities, but just that everyone is awaiting the Elections Commission.
Now, unofficial tallies are putting football star George Weah on the lead. Is his team already celebrating?
Yes, there are supporters of George Weah that have been seen in the past 2 days celebrating, as preliminary results from the various local radio stations have been reported across the country. Although the Elections Commission has not yet announced the final result or the winner, but for indications, they are already celebrating that Weah is going to win this election.
What do we know from the opposite camp? I mean the camp of the Vice President Boakai.
Well, analysts may say that it is not a good sign for Joseph Boakai. And a previous interview the international media had with Joseph Boakai, he said that, well, whether he was satisfied with the Elections Commission and the process, he said he would live up to it. His response was not too favorable, but it seemed as though he was just into it because of frustration and the indication that he seemed not to be in the lead. But it's not a good sign for Joseph Boakai, who's the current vice president, and that of, serving the government for 12 years.
Now, on that note, irrespective of what the outcome will be, is there a sense of both candidates accepting the results?
That is exactly what ECOWAS had cautioned the two parties to do. ECOWAS had a press conference yesterday with its first preliminary declaration, declaring the election as peaceful and celebratory, and called on George Weah and Joseph Boakai to accept the result of the Elections Commission, which is the will of the Liberian people, according to the ECOWAS.
Evelyn Pade bringing us up to date with what is happening in Liberia.
And as you know, in case you don't, on Facebook, we have been following what Liberians and other Africans are saying about the Liberian election and also the former Liberian president's legacy. That's Ellen Johnson Sirleaf's legacy. And Tisatsa says Liberia is the same as other sub-Saharan countries. Corruption and tribalism are one of the greatest threats. Tribalism has been elevated to dominate national discourse, controls how people think and talk, and determines what they oppose or support.
Controls how they think or support. And he talks about tribalism also being an influence on how people think. Is this the same case in your country, for example?
I would be interested to find out from our listeners first, and then we'll share our opinions a little later. We also have another comment from Wanda Lachier, who says, I am out of words and totally dissatisfied. And here she's referring to Ellen Johnson Sirleaf's legacy.
But we have Badu Princess, who says, we don't need old dead brains in Africa as leaders. The non-greedy and non-corrupt young leaders can do better. I hope that that really has something to offer, that the young people will make Africa better. But there is the young generation, the young move is starting in Europe, and probably one day it will end up in Africa.
And now we take you to the top story around the world. Officials in Afghanistan now say that at least 41 people were killed and dozens more injured in a series of blasts in the capital, Kabul. A suicide bomber is reported to have detonated a device at a gathering in a Shia cultural center. Witnesses say many of the victims were students. In an online statement, so-called Islamic State is claiming its supporters were behind the attacks. Laila Harak spoke with DW's Asia Desk editor Florian Weigert and started by asking him why so-called IS targeted the venue.
Well, it's quite obvious that the extremists from IS, they're targeting Shia because they think they're not real Muslims, they're infidels. And this is a view which is shared by a lot of other Sunni extremists, and that brings us to an interesting twist of the story. An Afghan expert told us that the real target was not the Shia community, but the Taliban, because IS and Taliban, they're both fighting over the allegiance of this Sunni extremists. And in the past, the IS conducted a lot of attacks against Ganshia community in the intention to get this Sunni extremists on their side.
What can you tell us about the presence of IS in Afghanistan now?
Well, that is a very touchy issue and a very touchy question because there are no real numbers. There are around 30,000 insurgents in Afghanistan, according to sources in Afghanistan. And there are people who say, Russian media, that there are 10,000 IS supporters in Afghanistan. I don't believe these numbers.
That was DW's Asia Desk editor Florian Weigand speaking to Laila Harak.
And now back to Africa. Now, if there is any country that is barely out of the news right now, it is Zimbabwe, even without the presence of former President Robert Mugabe. The new president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, seems to be following in the footsteps of his predecessor in terms of controversy concerning his cabinet appointments. Many Zimbabweans now have to get used to seeing the same old faces they are used to. Columbus Mavunga with what they've been thinking about Mnangagwa's cabinet.
34-year-old Dambudzo Maupa holds a master's degree in business administration but is vending vegetables. She is one of the many Zimbabweans skeptical about the new cabinet.
There's nothing new. These are people that have been in the government for quite some time, and I'm not expecting anything new. We're expecting new blood, younger people. People who have made records, people who have made an impact in the industry, but right now there isn't anything to show for it.
Arnold Tsunga agrees with her. He is the director of the International Commission of Jurists in Africa.
The appointment of the general who led the military intervention that resulted in the removal of President Mugabe from power raises afresh the question of whether there was a coup d'etat or not in Zimbabwe, or in the language of the African Union, whether there was an unconstitutional change of government.
On the social media, Zimbabweans are calling it a coup net. Relax, for I bet you won't find it in your dictionary. For Zimbabweans, coup net is a hybrid of coup leaders and civilians in a cabinet. The opposition has already condemned Mnangagwa's cabinet and his leadership, calling on the international community not to recognize it. But after Chief Justice Luke Malaba had sworn in Zimbabwe's two new vice presidents, General Constantino Chiwenga and Defense Minister Kembo Mohadi, President Emmerson Mnangagwa said he had confidence in his team.
I now have the two lieutenants.
I now have the two lieutenants. I believe they're very experienced. They will be hitting the ground running. They have to drive the ministers. The performance of the ministers will be reflected by the supervision they give. So their assessment is upon the results of the ministers they drive.
Zimbabwe is expected to hold elections by or around mid-2018. Mnangagwa has already indicated that he will contest. His special advisor, Christopher Mtswangwa, said the ruling ZANU-PF party would use the military to ensure victory in the 2018 elections. Rights groups say the continued use of the army in policing civilians instills fears among Zimbabweans.
Columbus Mavunga in Harare.
And this is another topic that we have been monitoring on our Facebook page and generally on social media. Now, a comment from Otumba Jay says, planned and playing out the drama quietly. Mugabe did not see this coming.
That's an interesting one. Mugabe did not see this coming. I guess the old man is happily watching what is happening in this country. Fatu Mark Elista Kabore says, loot and share. That's a good one. Very
it is.
Short
and remember, someone that was in that report says, it's the same thing. You know, it's faces that they're seeing that have been there before, but they were expecting to see newer faces,
probably
younger faces.
Probably
even.
That reminds me of that comment from that concerning Liberia, that Africa doesn't need the old brains, but rather the young people who are ready to move, change and take the continent forward. Hope Ibera says they were smarter than Grace Mugabe. Keep tuning to Africa Link. We have lots of stuff coming in shortly.
In case you've just tuned in, this is DW's Africa Link program, live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. My name is Wanjiko Mwaura.
And I'm Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
Now, in the next part of the program, Killing Me Softly is a double-edged sword for Kenyan painters as they have to deal with lead in paint at the expense of their health.
I would not leave this job, but you can tell me what to do to avoid lead poisoning.
And we shall also hear how Ghanaian youths are fighting extremism. But first, in South Sudan, the recent fighting between government and rebel forces near the town of Lasu casts doubt on efforts to revive the peace deal. More and more South Sudanese have fled their country, seeking refuge in neighboring countries like DRC, Kenya and Uganda that has taken the biggest number.
But in the DRC, it is no easy entry as the Congolese army has stepped up arrests of refugees and tightened the border in a bid to block rebels from seeking sanctuary in its country. South Sudan's warring parties have accused each other of breaking the peace deal. Simona Fulton has been speaking to some refugees in DRC to find out what they think of the latest ceasefire agreement. And her report is now presented by Sela Oneko.
Genti Jendia is seated on a dusty floor of a reception center in a refugee camp for South Sudanese near the Congolese border town of Aba. She's just crossed the border after hiding for 4 days in the bush as government and rebel forces clashed near her hometown of Lasu. She's skeptical whether the latest ceasefire will hold.
It's something that people have agreed upon, but it's just on paper. I want to see with my own eyes if it's actually implemented.
While warring parties sat down to talk in Addis Ababa last week, hundreds of South Sudanese refugees poured across the border to the Democratic Republic of Congo to flee fresh fighting. At the border, exhausted families sit under trees, waiting to be transferred to the refugee site. Peter Lomoro said that he grabbed his 4 children and ran when he heard of government soldiers advancing on his village of Nyori.
When I heard they were coming, I didn't even wait for a minute. When they see young men like me, they'll just shoot.
The government captured the rebels' headquarters in Lasu in what is just the latest in a series of military setbacks for the opposition. Liwa Morris, the president of the refugee settlement in Aba, says that the people won't return to Lasu as long as the town remains in government hands.
Before it was a rebel IO in that area. But since the government soldier came in, the civilian tend to run away. They are afraid of the government soldier. And as per now, we have a good number of the newcomers, mostly refugees, in the site.
The most recent ceasefire seems to be floundering already, with both government and rebels accusing each other of violations just hours after the deal was signed. Richard Moy, a recent arrival from Lasu, wants the international community to do more to enforce the agreement.
The negotiations in Addis Ababa have been going on for a long time, but nothing good has come out of them. I'm calling on those big powers like the United States to take Riek Machar and Salva Kiir and put them in jail so that all South Sudanese can go back home.
Sela Oneko presented that report by Simona Fulton.
It's not been an easy thing for the people of South Sudan, Wanjiko. But the good thing, it's not easy in South Sudan. The good thing, however, is that the neighboring countries have shown a lot of love and friendship. Uganda, my country, of course, has welcomed lots of people, lots of South Sudanese refugees. The last time I knew, the number was way beyond 1 million of them. Of course, your own Kenya is also taking in lots of them.
Yeah, and we also have Rwanda that opened up its borders to also African refugees from the recent situation in Libya. Or current, if I would actually be factual, it's
that
current.
That was quite a very encouraging move from the president of Rwanda there to say, hey, fellow Africans, my doors are open. You can come over. You're always welcome. Continental spirit there. Very interesting. So it's not only Europe taking in African and refugees. After all, African countries themselves are welcoming their own refugees. And that's a good spirit to keep. But we always keep hoping that one day there will be peace throughout the continent and we don't have to have the crisis of refugees. Keep those comments coming.
News On.
A group of students calling themselves Voices of Change have embarked on a campaign drive to counter religious extremism in Ghana. They use the slogan, "Speak out, stop them," and go from one event to the other and school to speak to people about their stand.
Now, in their view, Ghana is particularly prone to extremists due to soaring unemployment rates. Estimates say more than 1.2 million Ghanaian youth are unemployed and are willing to do anything for their survival, including joining radical groups for money. Maxwell Sook with the details.
More than 70% of the residents of northern Ghana are Muslims. Out of these over 70% who are Muslims, we have almost all the dominant Islamic sects here in the northern region.
Amadou Mohamed Faisal is the faculty coordinator for combating violence and extremism at the University of Development Studies in Tamale. Belief in this area is often almost blind, mixed with ignorance. It can be a dangerous and heady combination, as Amadou Faisal found when he conducted a study.
Out of 2,000 people that we had interviewed in 2017, 78 of these people actually said that if anything is happening to their religious leader, they are willing to take up arms to defend his interest. And almost 90-something percent said for whatever will go against their religion, Islam, and the sect that they belong to, they will stand up seriously against it.
The research also found that misconceptions were widespread, including the kinds of ideas peddled by so-called Islamic State, that if you die fighting for your religion, you will be rewarded in heaven.
Because for them, if you die in the course of defending your religion, you have over 70,000 women waiting for you in heaven. But of course, this we all know is a misconception or a misinterpretation of that Quranic verse.
That is why Amadou Faisal helped set up the peer-to-peer challenge to encourage change. Voices of Change is an online campaign supported by Facebook and United States Department of Security. It has been set up to counter the recruitment of vulnerable youth to extremist groups. Dr. Kwesi Eneng, a security analyst from the Kofi Annan International Peace Center, says Ghana is prone to extremists.
Islamic State has issued a very specific statement focusing on this country and looking for opportunities to establish bases, that is, if they have not already done so.
Zena Mohamed Nderi is a team leader in the peer-to-peer challenge on countering that extremism.
This season we are using communicators against religious extremism as our campaign message, with the slogan "Speak up, stop them." So as the youth, we are trying to use social media platforms to counter religious extremism and create awareness about the vulnerability of the youth to join extremist or terrorist groups.
Kampim Joshua Wedam is one of the students campaigning against extremism. He comes from a majority Christian village and sees that the dominance of the Christians there has led to resentment amongst the Muslims and a split in the community.
I come from Navrongo, and I've realized that when there's always a gathering, most of the times because of the dominance of the Christians, there's some kind of segregation and extremism against the Muslim religion, and they don't work together as a community to develop.
Voices of Change hopes that they can head young people off at the pass.
Maxwell Sook. Now, Wajiku, do you feel the roar of African youth? I mean, the really...
I can feel it.
It's amazing.
In case you're wondering, what are these people talking about? We just covered a story of young people who are taking the charge in tackling extremism.
Yes. I mean, they are saying, let's not wait for the government to do this. We are doing it ourselves. After all, it's the youth who are who are vulnerable to radicalization.
Speaking out.
Now, from West Africa, we head over to East Africa. Lead poisoning in Kenya from decorative paints is on the rise and is being blamed for an increase of health complications. 71% of paints used in Kenya contain dangerously high lead levels. Few paints carry consumer information about the lead content or the dangers associated with its exposure.
Lead is mainly added to paint to speed up drying and to maintain a fresh appearance. But as DW's Andrew Wasike found out, for those working in this industry, eking out a living is more important than all the health hazards that come with it.
Ziwani Juakali Engineering Works Center in Nairobi is a booming car painting service center. Choking fumes from paint guns powered by old diesel generators hit me on arrival. Workers here are busy painting vehicles, which require a new coat of paint without any protective gadgets. Peter Oluoch is one of them.
My brother brought me to Nairobi to work in 2010. Since then, I support my wife and my two children using this job. My job caters for our every need. As you can see, as I apply the paint, I have nothing to prevent me from inhaling it. So I have no choice but to breathe in the toxic lead paint.
Oluoch says he suffers from breathing complications since he started the painting job 7 years ago. Oluoch is among thousands of Kenyans who are exposed to lead poisoning every day. The Center for Environment, Justice and Development, an environmental watchdog in Kenya, says 27 out of the 31 brands of paints in Kenya contain toxic lead levels, which are way above the set limit by the World Health Organization. Lygia Noronha, director of the United Nations Environment Program, UNEP, Division of Technology, Industry and Economics, tells me it is about time Kenya took a stance against this silent killer, stalking Kenya's paint industries for a long time.
Because the paint is often used in houses, they're used in, you know, children's toys, and that affects them and affects their mental ability. So we are hoping that we will stop using lead in paints. There are alternatives to this, and so, you know, you need to work with the companies to look at alternatives to the lead used in paint. So we hope that lead gets out of paint just as lead got out of fuel. This is a campaign to get lead out of paint.
The UN says that exposure to lead in paints causes brain damage to 600,000 children annually. But adults are not spared either. Dr. Francis Karaoke from the Comprehensive Environmental Health Management Solutions says they have found high levels of lead among workers at the painting centers after carrying out blood tests.
It may take a long duration of time before persons who are working in this trade are able to exhibit the symptoms that may show that indeed this person has experienced lead poisoning or has high amount of lead in their blood.
After about 1 hour at the center filing the story, I had to leave as the paint fumes got more intense. But I had one last question for Oluoch. Would he give up on his job, having known the dangers of lead to his health?
I would not leave this job, but you can tell me what to do to avoid lead poisoning.
That report was filed by Andrew Wasike. Not so pleasant. And people have as well been commenting about that, Wanjiku.
Yes, indeed. We are still monitoring your comments on Facebook. Remember, the Facebook page is DW Africa, so do not be left behind. And Victor Sowa says, I am a car painter and it's very dangerous to use this product without proper protection. The inhaling of the lead into your lungs affects your kidneys.
If you heard very well in that report, they also said, it also indicated that some of children's toys are also painted with that. And this is very, very dangerous for the children. It's really very unfortunate. But we at Africa Link keep bringing you this kind of information and do hope that it will certainly reach the right people.
Yes,
and
indeed.
And you who is listening out there or following the program on our Facebook page, please do leave a comment there, make your contribution and share the kind of information that you know so that the rest of the people will learn something.
Absolutely. And just to bring you up to speed, our top story from Africa today, we are still following the Liberian rerun results that we are waiting the official announcement for and that to know who has won.
Anytime from now, the Electoral Commission should be announcing at least the preliminary results. That's all we had time for. Keep it to Africa Link from me, Jane Ayeka Kumet.
And me, Wanjiko Mwaura.
It was pleasant to have you on board, and we shall be here tomorrow sometime.